Thank you, and appreciate you having me. It's always an honor. I just, the vastness of what you have built with Rush Limbaugh. I got to witness this recently when I had filled in for Rush previously and then had an opportunity to drive halfway across the country with my daughter. And we would go through town after town, and I would hear this program, you know, through Arizona and central Utah and Idaho, California, Oregon. It's the western part of the country. The vastness of what's gone on is so important because this program is also a gathering place. And it's a gathering place to get some information that the media simply won't give you. This just happened during the break. I went to scan some news. I popped over. I have a news reader, sort of RSS type reader. And it points me to this article from Fox News. This has just now come up. That the head of the World Health Organization chief is congratulating China on their great job at helping to stop the Wuhan flu. For the first time, China has reported no domestic COVID-19 cases. This is an amazing achievement, which gives us all reassurance that the coronavirus can be beaten. And this is the head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom. I can't say the last name because I can't see it because I'm old. Well, that's really kind of him to say all that, not knowing what China's doing, the actual truth, because we don't. And it was this morning that that Bo Snerdley sent me this incredible article from the Wall Street Journal. But just imagine, and this is the point I wanted to get across to you. When I learned how coordinated news coverage is, even I, a cynic, was taken aback. I learned this in Washington, D.C. I was in the opposition research office at the Republican National Committee. I used to be the chief digital strategist there. And my friends had a whiteboard, and they had some data up there. So what's that? Oh, we're having a contest to see who can get the most questions into a morning news show. So wait, so you guys write the questions, and someone on the research team laughed and goes, Todd, we do the whole show. Well, that's changed. That was 2009. You can see that it's the DNC who's coordinating all this, right? Because look, all of a sudden, they've turned on a dime towards China. And despite this piece from the Wall Street Journal that they hid this for 3 weeks, despite this piece, as the journal points out, that perhaps they were disappearing. We know they were punishing doctors who stepped up to say, hey, this is a problem. Maybe we should warn the world. That the dictator of China allowed the Lunar New Year event and celebration to go on, to continue. Now, we have 258,000 cases of this in our country. And where are we going to turn? I mean, we've got a president who's acting, and he's acting swiftly. And his press conferences have been spot on. Please, Mr. President, keep calling it the Chinese virus because we have this opportunity for this incredible change. But I also appreciate the fact that the president is pointing out some things that are happening in our country in terms of the private world of free market hears. A friend of mine, Joy Munson, who does a radio show in Seattle, he interviewed a guy who believes he was saved by the Ebola medication. And this is a couple weeks ago. He got coronavirus. He felt he was near death. He couldn't breathe. It was an effort to walk across the room. His lungs were so congested, so full, that he was literally ready to take an experimental drug, and they gave him one. This is the drug for Ebola that had been used for Ebola. They gave him that, and a couple days later, he was cured. He was walking around. He is absolutely convinced that this changed his life. That's one guy. It's anecdotal. I understand that it's purely anecdotal. Then I'm looking at this, and I'm predicting that it's the free market that saves the free market, because I want to get into what's in this package that Mitch McConnell, Steve Mnuchin, the president, the Senate, etc., are bringing about. You heard Peter Schweizer, great author who's investigated political corruption his whole career. You heard him say, hey, careful what they hide in this bill. Yeah, let's be careful about that. Thank God the President Trump has already said, hey, you're not going to be using this money to buy your stock back. Don't do that. I hope the president will put some more rules on that, such as, hey, to the degree that we can we structure this as loans, and maybe we can buy some stock in these companies. We're going to help them. The government has harmed them. The government actions have harmed them. Maybe we get some stock, right? Although then the government has to unload the stock, et cetera. That can turn into a problem. But look at this. There's a private company. It's called Earlywell. Congratulations, Earlywell. You just got mentioned on the largest radio show in history. Beginning Monday, you are going to be able to get a home testing kit for coronavirus, for the Wuhan flu. And they've turned this around so quickly. Here's, I want to make something so perfectly clear. This is an incredible advance that they can do this so quickly. This is so different from the time of the Spanish flu. By the way, did you know, oh, no, I'm going to concentrate. I'm not going to mention the fact that David Frum tweeted out that no one says Spanish flu, when in fact, David Frum tweeted Spanish flu a few years ago. So I'm not going to mention that. I think I mentioned it. So Earlywell offers these validation tests that you could do in your home. Some words of caution. Just because you get the test doesn't mean that you're going to find out if you have the Wuhan flu, okay? A doctor is going to look at your symptoms. They're going to do telehealth. This is just, think of this in comparison to the last time. Think of this in comparison to when President Obama had to deal with the swine flu. They're going to use telehealth to look at your symptoms, compare that to a questionnaire, and a doctor is going to determine whether your testing moves forward, because they don't want to flood the labs with tests to people who likely don't have the Wuhan flu. But think of this. The missing data. Here's the missing data as I see it, and I'm not a data scientist, but I pretend to be one. We don't know how many people are infected now. Now, can you imagine how important that variable is mathematically? Okay, we're talking about death rates, which are distorted because where I am, I'm in Seattle in the hot zone of the hot zones. Most of the deaths occurred at one care facility for elders, where they did a terrible job of locking it down. They didn't do anything to stop it. As I can see, JNZ, the governor here, he's taken some good steps, but he didn't do anything to stop it. So the numbers are distorted. But think of this variable, folks. If far more people are infected and not sick, it would seem to me that would give us an opportunity to quarantine the people who are most likely to get sick. The more data we have, the more points of comparison we can have, so that we can say, hey, you know what? Here are the people likely to get sick. These are the people to quarantine. And then I heard this discussion between some medical professionals and some of the show prep. I read and I listen at the same time. So a couple of epidemiologists and virologists were talking about and taking calls from people. And isn't this a little bit like a forest fire? That right now we have no cure, we have no vaccine, but there are the abilities of our bodies to build up antibodies. So they were using the forest fire scenario, that if rain comes, that can slow this down. If the winds shift, et cetera, if it gets cooler, all these things can mean the fire spreads less quickly. If a bunch of us have had contact with the virus, have not gotten particularly sick, we built up antibodies, doesn't that mean that part of our economy can come back? Because I know the president wants this. I know you want this. And what's most remarkable to me about all of this is the good cheer. Are you looking at your fellow Americans? Greg, screening calls in New York, was just telling me he was talking with someone in California. And they said, yeah, we're in lockdown, 40 million of us. Yeah, it's a misdemeanor to leave our house. But there's no fires. And we can watch things. There's electricity, right, this time. The cheer, the good cheer, that gets you through it. I'm proud of Americans. I'm proud to be an American because of that. President is still looking at the stimulus plan, $1,000 to $2,000 per person. Not the ultra rich. Mitch McConnell says middle class and down. What does that mean? Is that $100,000 down, $80,000 down? They're looking at multipliers, $500 to, I read at one point, $1,200. If you have a kid, $500 per kid, maybe $1,200 per kid. And yes, this is money we're going to borrow. We don't have the cash. There'd be some other ways to do it, like unemployment extensions, like tax waivers. And then there's this. God bless this action. The president has delayed tax filing until July 15th. And you know what? You can undercut that. Oh, well, that's just, well, no. This is receipts you don't have to gather. These are accountants you don't have to go see. These are accountants who can deal with their families, etc. So there's a lot of ways to do this. But I would like to know what this audience thinks of the economic package being offered and talked about in Washington, D.C., especially in light of Peter Schweitzer telling us, hey, there's a lot of levers people could pull to hide financial skullduggery in this stuff. We know this about big bills. I want to see CEO Trump. I want to see CFO Trump. I want to see a lockdown. We're going to help you. You don't get to go buy your stock back. We're going to help you, but we're not taking the sucker position. We're going to help you, big companies, because we've harmed you with our actions. But we're going to be hedged. We're going to be protected. This is about the American people. I'd love to see CFO Trump with a pencil finally sharpened, telling Democrats what he'll take and what he won't. Of course, speed, that has to happen. A lot more to get to. It's Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. I opened up the monologue section of the program, portion of the program, by noting about driving across the country and having filled in for Rush for, I think, a couple of days, and then taking a trip around the Western United States with my daughter and hearing this program in all of these places. And the phenomena of this allows us to do things like this. This can't happen without the scope of what you guys have built here with Rush. Oh, speaking of that, the Limbaugh letter, we looked, and this isn't available on the digital version, but yep, in fact, the Limbaugh letter did have an interview. Rush interviewed Peter Schweitzer. We talked about last hour, talked with, who's tracking down the corruption in these stock sales during COVID-19 Wuhan flu. In fact, that's in there. That's the Limbaugh letter. It is a compendium of the people Rush considers important enough to interview in writing. And you can get that at rushlimbaugh.com. It is absolutely guaranteed worth. This is what I meant about scope. Bob is calling us from Idaho. Bob, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh program. You have a very, very unique point of view from one of the most beautiful states in the country. Bob, tell us about what you're learning.
Well, I'm a teacher. In fact, my job right now, I'm teaching English literature online to Chinese children, but I lived in China for 7 years, and Bob's not my real name because you never know who's listening. Someday when this is all cleared up, I'd like to go back. But I lived in Wuhan. It's Wuhan, not Wuhan.
Wuhan.
For 5 years, and I still have friends there with whom I communicate via WeChat, which is the Chinese version of, I don't know, whatever it is in America with that green...
Snapchat.
I don't know. I have a Facebook account, but I don't use it. I'm not up on social media, really. And then I lived in Shanghai for 2 years before I came home.
So what are you learning?
As far as Trump calling it the China virus, you know, I don't have a problem with that per se, because that is where it came from. But I do wish he would kind of clarify that this is kind of directed at the Chinese government, who stomp on everybody's, you know, they don't have freedom of speech. They don't, you know. Yeah. My friend, one very close friend whom I communicate with at least like every other day, let's just call her Catherine, because, again, you never know who's listening. She tells me, I mean, they can't leave their homes. They're locked in. She lives in like an upper middle class area, kind of next to the Yellow River. So they get groceries brought to them. But she knows for a fact, because she communicates with others that she knows that live in poorer areas that don't have that privilege or that luxury, you know, that benefit. They'll come through the streets sometimes, and she'll hear this very Orwellian, you know, everything's going to be okay, you know, through the bullhorns and stuff like that.
Does she think people are still sick? Because China's saying a Wuhan, I think I said that the right way, that they no longer have any...
closer. It's Wuhan.
Wuhan. I'm trying. I really am, Bob.
No, it's all good.
the Chinese are telling us, well, we didn't even have a case in Wuhan.
She doesn't believe that, but there's no way for her or anyone else living there to really know that. You know, they watch the CCTV news. What are they going to say? You know, she doesn't believe it. And frankly, I don't either. I just don't. I don't believe it. And like I said, you know, my friend Catherine doesn't believe it either.
Well, can you do something for us? And I don't mean to speak on behalf of Rush's audience. I can't do that. But maybe just on my behalf, just let Catherine know that we, the American people, are praying for the Chinese people, and hoping for them. And that we do recognize it's their government. Do they know that? Do they know that we're cool with the Chinese people?
Well, at least my students and my friends over there do.
Yeah.
In fact, all the time I was over there, there was one thing I'll never forget. When I walked into a restaurant, they have this, it's kind of a buffet. It's a kind of soup called mala tang, which means hot, hot, hot. And you can choose all these different ingredients, put it in your bowl. It's a meal in itself. And I walked in there. I was a frequenter of this place because it was on the campus. And there was one little girl there, and she just started crying. She said, "Wanpa," which means I'm very scared. You know, so I just left, and I just thought, there's no way a little girl was born like that, you know, hating the round eye. You know, she was taught that. And the only time I ever ran into, you know, what would be called racism was from the older generation.
Yeah.
Never from anyone. I'm middle-aged. And anyone my age or younger, I never ran into any kind of thing like that once. It was only from the elderly that occasionally I would run into that. And usually it was in a smaller city that had not been exposed to foreigners.
Yep.
You know, and you could just tell, you know, just try to buy a cup of tea or something like that, and they're just like scowl at you. And, you know, one time I went to a hostel, and this woman, you know, obviously she didn't know that I could speak Chinese, and she started talking, you know, saying bad things about America.
Yeah.
And so I came back at her when, you know, she was ready to let me check in, and I said, "Well, it's a good thing that you don't have to go to America," in Chinese to her. And she just turned like crimson and just put her head down and ran out of the room. And about a minute later, somebody else came out to check me in my room.
It's a great story. Bob, thanks for filling us in on this. Our prayers for your students, et cetera. Thank you for informing us and for calling Rush's show. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for that, Bob. One thing I would point out, I learned this years ago. Do you know what was illegal? Well, I mean, everything was illegal in Stalin's Russia. But do you know why there was no crime in Ukraine? I don't know. It was illegal. Not crime. It was illegal to report a crime. I was researching the Soviet Union. Under Stalin, it was illegal to report a crime because crime didn't exist. So if you reported a crime, you were the criminal because you were lying or there was only mental illness and they were curing that. So it wasn't a crime, it was mental illness. So that's what we're looking at, I think, with China. I don't trust their numbers even a little bit. But we've got the World Health Organization saying, no, they're great. We've got the American media saying they're great. We've got the Democrats saying, no, China's great. Stop making fun of stop saying Chinese virus. That's coordinated, folks. It's coordinated. Question is why? It's Todd Herman in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB network. Someone took me to task on Twitter. Kenneth says, we really need you to maturely deliver. Now is not the time for goofy stuff. Play straight. The world is on edge. Quit with silly. No one is laughing right now, and Robin Williams isn't around anymore. No, Robin Williams isn't around anymore. I think that I'm guessing, I asked him on Twitter, I think he's referring to what we talked about at the top of the hour, where a Californian sent the EIB call screener, Greg, the official call screener today, a note saying, hey, we're in California, we're in lockdown, but we are saying to ourselves, well, at least there's no fires, and at least we have electricity, we can watch stuff. There's a human range of dealing with this stuff. And I would point something out with very dear respect to Ken. I see where you're coming from. People who make it through these things with their health intact, do you know what one of the top predictors of your making it through a situation is? Humor. The ability to find humor in things is a innate survival skill for many. So I understand that moment of levity. I think that's what you're talking about, Ken, because I don't know that I've made other jokes. Maybe I have, and that's okay. I don't respond to every critique this way. I think that what you're saying is actually really interesting and poignant. You know, there's some numbers to get to, and it's about a optimistic look at where this virus might go, written by he's co-director of the university's Meta Research Innovation Center and professor of medicine, biomedical data science, statistics, and epidemiology and population health there's nothing he doesn't know, and apparently in this area. I want to get to those numbers. First, I want to talk finances. I want to talk about the Steve Mnuchin, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 per person, $500 if you have a kid, or maybe $1,200 per kid. Mitch McConnell wants a bigger package, etc., cash money to as many Americans as possible. And the president now is starting to put some limits onto the companies. If we bail you out, we know we help cause the problem. If we bail you out, no fair using our cash to do a stock buyback. And just think of this. Your stock is bottomed out. The American people give you money that we borrow and that we, you know, God forbid, print. And then you use that to buy your stock, knowing that you're also going to use that money for operations, etc. It's incredible. Incredible that they could do that. I love that the president's putting limits on this. By the way, the press has their new moment of anger, their new 2 minutes hate. Is a reporter asked the president, what do you say to scared Americans? And they're characterizing the president as lashing out at this. Now, my policy on Trump News is to wait 24 hours to find the full story when the fake news spin stops. So let's talk economics with James in Hamden, Massachusetts. James, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. It's Todd Herman filling in. Hi, James.
Hi, Todd. Thank you for taking my call. It's a pleasure talking to you.
You too. Todd, thank you.
You mentioned something earlier in the show that I'm passionate about, and that is addressing the economic impact of this through unemployment. It seems ludicrous that the government would be sending out checks to people that are not impacted by this. There's already an infrastructure in place for unemployment through each state, and I would like to see the federal government pump money into the unemployment offices of each state so that people that are directly affected by this can get close to their normal wages. In my state, unemployment is 50% of prior wages, and that's not enough for people that are laid off through no fault of their own.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying. And I'd also say this, though, that unemployment covers employees, and the government action has taken your job. So this is not stimulus. It's not a loan. It's not welfare. It's we've taken your job away from you, so we're going to provide you recompense. I like what you're saying about the unemployment program. What about business owners? Because business owners, it's not the wage. Because a true business owner has no minimum wage. And people need to reflect on this. The minimum wage for an actual business owner is zero. Okay, there's no minimum. But they also have the expenses, James, of rent or mortgage, vendor contracts. They've got that. They've got insurance that they have to pay. They've got, you know, state unemployment insurance, federal unemployment insurance. These things they need to pay. We have the holiday from the payroll tax. That's good. But what do you do then for business owners who are not in, you know, in a position to live just on a wage?
I can only speak from my personal perspective. I'm a small business owner, just a few employees that I'm looking at the possibility of laying off. I yeah. want to see them protected as much as possible. I'm in the situation where I could weather this if I did not have a payroll expense. I could weather this for a while. I don't have a lot of ongoing expenses other than payroll. But I understand there are other businesses that do have expenses. And I would like to see some very aggressive programs for help those people go through that period of uncertainty until we get back up and going again.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know that either of us have specific ideas. I like the payroll tax. I like putting off the taxes until July 15th. You don't, if you didn't know this, the president now, you don't have to file your federal income taxes till July 15th, no longer April 15th. There's some other things we could do, like just how about a tax holiday? State tax holidays. How about some property tax holidays? Because you'll notice the people who aren't sacrificing are largely government employees. And in fact, I'm going to tell you something about a lot of the teachers who aren't working are getting paid. In the next segment, I got to share with you the virtue signaling that the schools in liberal states are doing on this. It's going to drive you nuts. James, thank you very much for the phone call. Appreciate that. Now, James is talking economics. Let's compare something. The president has taken unbelievably swift action, aggressive action. He jumped at this, and he is treating it like a war. He is. I'm extremely proud of the effort and the focus and the communication. And you know what? I'm sorry. The clear passion for this. This is an engaged Donald Trump. This is the president at what I consider his very best. This is CEO Trump. This is the what do I need to move? What do I need to knock down? Who do I need to move? Where do I need to apply resources? Is it people? Is it money? Is it operations? Is it red tape? Tell me what I need to do to serve you. love that. And he's been rewarded in terms of his approval rating for handling this has flipped. It's now much more positive than it was negative. It's much more positive. I just want to throw this out there as a risk. But it would be a happy accident, I think. This is from the Daily Wire. It is about a Stanford. Check out the bio. Co-director of the university's Meta Research Innovation Center, professor of medicine, biomedical data science, statistics, and epidemiology and population health. His name is John Leonidas. Leonidas. I think I'm saying that right. Or Leonidas. He did the most interesting data crunch. He chose one circumstance where there was an entire closed population. And that's the Diamond Princess cruise ship, those quarantine passengers. He calculated there a fatality rate of 1%. Now, he points out, most of the people were elderly. They're the at the demographic at most risk. So what he did then was he projected that result, that sad result, onto the population at large. And he came back with a 0.125% range of death or death rate, with a range of also it could be 0.025 to 0.625, much smaller. I know numbers on radio sometimes don't work, much smaller. Here's what he said. Projecting the Diamond Princess mortality rate onto the age structure of the U.S. population, the death rate among people infected with COVID-19 would be 0.125%. But since this estimate is based upon extremely thin data, there were just 7 deaths among the 700 infected passengers and crew, the real death rate could stretch from 5 times lower to 5 times higher. But what this bottom line of this is, that this could end up killing fewer people than the common cold often kills. 8% rate of the common cold with people in a bad position health-wise. Anyway, the common type cold, mild or common. 8% sometimes with an at-risk population. So what I'm saying is the president has jumped into action. This is CEO Trump. This is move things. Get people out of my way. Cut the red tape. What do you need to save the American people and businesses? Love the focus. I hope we will keep in mind that if it turns out, thank God, there is a lower death rate than this. The president didn't have this data, and that's a small data set. But it's one more reason that we can have a little bit of optimism. And we come back on the Rush Limbaugh program. You know what will get us killed? Leftist virtue signaling. Social justice warriors gone mad. We'll share that with you. We come back on the Rush Limbaugh show. Also, your phone calls. Todd Herman filling in for Rush on the EIB network. I'm getting old when I like this version of the wrong songs, Emotional Rescues. Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB network. We just have been going through comparisons all day. A president of action, Democrats, Liz Warren, Hillary Clinton staffers, creating a dark money entity to war room the president's response. We have the president correctly calling out China as where the virus began. The Wall Street Journal documenting the fact that that they hid that from us, that they 3 weeks hid us. They put on hid it from us. They put on the Lunar New Year, knowing that the virus was a concern, knowing it was spreading. And we have now the media and the Democrats all united behind China to use as a cudgel against President Trump, as someone just pointed out to me on social media. Right. That's right. That's one of the reasons. Also, there's this. China deeply wants Joe Biden to be president because Joe Biden has carried China's water. He agreed with the one child policy. He brought the dictator of China to Hollywood to help put together a $300 billion film deal with Katzenberg and the people in Hollywood, who, of course, virtue signal against American states that, just want girls to play against girls in basketball, not against boys. They'll virtue signal and, we won't produce things there. China, they're good. So there is an opportunity for the president to use this moment to change our relationship with China. Also to show what a CEO can do when a CEO must do it quickly. Bob in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. It's Todd Herman filling in. Hello, Bob.
Good afternoon, Todd. You know, I was listening to you comment on how the president responded to this crisis, both from an economic standpoint and a medical standpoint. And I wanted to make the observation, this is what you get when you allow a successful, experienced business person to run this country instead of a swamp creature politician. We saw what happened with Barack Obama when we had a virus. Thousands and thousands died before he even opened his eyes. And God forbid, if Hillary Clinton were president right now, we'd probably all be dead. We should get down on our knees and thank Donald Trump for having the guts and the experience to get us through this. He has done more than any other president would ever have done, and I surely hope he sticks around for another term.
Well, it's really well said. Very passionate, Bob. I know the president appreciates that. I think he feels these things. And I would just point out just something you said. Remember the disaster in Haiti when the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons got involved? Do you know what their focus became there, Bob, in Haiti? Do you know what they did for the Haitian people?
Well,
do you remember this?
They stole a lot of money from them.
What they did is they got a monopoly to build a Wi-Fi network in a nation where people were crawling on the ground for food. They got a they gave a monopoly to their friends to build a Wi-Fi network. It is astonishing. I know that they're probably doing a calculation on opportunity loss, the Clinton Foundation, for not being able to sell their friends into this relief package. Great call, Bob. Thanks very much for the phone call. Also included in all of this is China. Here's where I'm at with China. And we had earlier, Bob from Idaho reminded us, it's the Chinese government. Here's where I'm at with the Chinese government. We have 250,000 sick people in our country. We've got a number of people dead. Our economy is taking a huge hit. You knew about this for 3 weeks to a month. You put on a large festival. You chose to do that. We're not going to cover for you. We're going to turn to you. I would love to see President Trump turn to the dictator of China after Trump wins a re-election and says, here's the changes. We're not making insulin there anymore. We're not making antibiotics in there anymore. Maybe 25%. We're divesting in a bunch of things. We get it. We can't trust you. Gain our trust, China. Gain our trust, Chinese government. Love to see that because I think there's a moment to do that. These moments don't come along all the time. Zelly in Auburn, Washington, just around the corner from me. Zelly, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. It's Todd Herman filling in. Hi, Zelly.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking my call. I'm an Asian American, and I am so glad that President Trump is managing this crisis with the best CEO skills that he has. And I am outraged at the most anti-American group I have ever seen. That is the media in cahoots with the Democrats. And I am so glad that the president is using the term Chinese virus. This is a Chinese Kung Flu virus. And this term should be used to take the take to task the Chinese communist regime, which is nothing less than criminally negligent for what they have done. And I hope that when this crisis is over, the president will lead a group of nations to demand reparations from China for what they have done. Xi Jinping should be brought before the International Tribunal for Crimes Against the Humanity, and the penalty is for China to make reparations for all the death and the loss of treasure here in the U.S., the economy, because of what they have done.
Zelly, that was so eloquent. I don't even want to sully this with anything other than Zelly from Auburn, Washington. That was brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You hear that? Now, I know it could sound, Rush did me a favor once to celebrate my local show in Seattle. He recorded something for a celebration we did. I was doing a live show. He called me the most effective kiss up in talk radio. He did. And this can sound like kissing up. Do you hear the range of your neighbors? The conversations coming to the table. We heard from people on the front lines, like mail carriers the other day, lab people, truckers. And now with the touch of EIB, we hear from the second Asian American to talk to us about their view of China and the president saying Chinese virus. I wonder if the media that uses Rush's show for show prep, I know I'm just a fill-in, but I wonder if they'll listen. Probably not. Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. Todd Herman filling in for Rush Limbaugh on the EIB Network. You know what eventually will get us killed is fake equity. We have, in the light of the, I'm trying to, we had a caller, Bob from Idaho, teaches English to young people in China, Wuhan virus. Trying that. I'm sure that will make the media much more happy if I pronounce it correctly. We have demands to let prisoners go. We have demands to not enforce crimes. In fact, in Baltimore, they've said, we're not going to enforce these crimes, which means those crimes are going to be committed, which means when people are in lockdown in their home, property crimes are going to be okay. Other crimes are going to be okay. Why announce that? If you're going to do it, why announce that? Then we have this in Seattle. Two school districts, the Seattle Public School District, which has a $1 billion budget and one of the richest school districts in our area, North Shore, has said, because a couple kids don't have laptops or phones, and I doubt that to be true, by the way, no kid gets access to online learning as the schools are shut. No one. I will state a fact. Here, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Austin, schools put out the word, we need laptops and phones for kids. One day, you have them. But that's not what they want. They want to rub your nose in it. That's the point. They don't want this. They want you hurting so you can say, oh, I see. I'm privileged. Right.